Part 10, Chapter 5. Disaster struck in the form of an earthquake on day 32 of the new year. Shortly after midnight, the tremor awakened Johnny. Equipment on his bureau in the London Palace Elite Hotel rattled together, and he sat up in his bed. The prolonged throb of vibration was still occurring. The old building groaned. The rumble of the earthquake traveled on. It was followed by a second, lesser tremor, a half minute later. And then, that was gone. It was not too unusual in the Rockies. No damage seemed to be done in the old mining town. Uneasy, but not really alarmed, Johnny pulled on buckskin pants and moccasins and, throwing a puma skin over his shoulders, sprinted through the snow to the Empire Dauntless. The duty sentry's light was on. The young Scot was tapping a buzzer key that activated the communication system to the mine. It was a directional laser radio, limited to an exact width and undetectable beyond these mountains. The Scot looked up. His face was a bit white.
"They don't answer."
He tapped the key again more rapidly, as though his finger by itself could shoot the beam through.
"Maybe the receiver pole got twisted in the quake."
In minutes, Johnny had a relief crew routed out. Spare ropes and winches assembled, blankets and stimulants packaged, and being loaded on the passenger plane. Strained faces turned repeatedly toward the mine, even though it was far out of their line of sight. They were worried for the mine duty shift. Thor, a shift leader named Dwight, and 15 men. The night was black as coal. Even the stars were masked by high, invisible clouds. It was no mean stunt flying these mountains in the dark. The instruments of the mine plane glowed green as the ship vaulted upward. The image screen painted a blurred picture of the terrain ahead. Johnny adjusted it to sharpness. Beside him, a co-pilot made some console plane weight corrections. Johnny was depending on his eyes to avoid the first mountain slope. He flipped on the plane's beam lights. They struck the snow slope, and he eased the plane up over it. He knew that things had been going too well. They had been making real progress in their preparations. They were far from ready, but what they had accomplished had been miraculous. He hunted ahead for the next mountainside, checking the view screen. Good Lord, it was dark. He checked his compass. The men in the back were tense and silent. He could almost feel what they were thinking. The top knoll flipped by under them, a little too close. Where was the next one? The assault rifles he had at first considered worthless were proving the very thing. With a great deal of ingenuity, they had salvaged the ammunition. They had drawn out the bullets from the case and tapped out the primer. By careful experimentation, they had found out how to substitute a blasting cap in the bottom of the shell case. At first, they had thought they would also need powder and had blown up a rifle trying it. No casualties. It turned out that the blasting cap was enough to fire a bullet at high velocity. Johnny swerved the plane to avoid a suddenly looming cliff and went a little higher. If he went too high, he could lose his way entirely if lights were out at the mine. His lights might also become visible at the compound. Stay low. Dangerous, but stay low. Then they had taken the bullets and drilled a small hole in the nose and, wearing radiation suits, inserted a grain of radioactive material from a TNW. They had covered this with a thin bit of melted lead. In this way, a man could carry the ammunition without danger of radiation hitting him. But when it was fired, oh my! They tried it on breathe gas in a glass bottle, and did that breathe gas explode? Too low, Johnny had recognized a lone scrub on a ridge. He lifted the plane over it. They were on course. Hold down the speed. Don't have another disaster flying in the dark. The bullets were also armor-piercing to some degree, and when fired into a breathe gas vial 200 yards away, caused a violent reaction that brought concussion all the way back to them. They put every available Scott onto an assembly line converting bullets, and they had cases and cases of them now. 100 assault rifles and 500 magazines had been cleaned to perfection. They fired without a stutter or dud. No good against a tank or a thick lead glass compound dome, but those assault rifles would be deadly to individual cyclos. With breathe gas in their bloodstreams, they would literally explode. He spotted the river that ran out of the gorge. He eased down, following it, the plane's lights flashing on the uneven ice and snow. They'd been so happy about the assault rifles that they had gone to work on the bazookas. They had found some nuclear artillery shells and had converted their noses over to the bazooka noses, and now they had armor-piercing nuclear bazookas. There were still a number of those left to make. Yes, it had been too smooth, too good to be true. There were no lights on the mine pad ahead. There was no one visible there at all. He set the plane down on the pad. The passengers boiled out of it. Their lights darted this way and that. One of them, who had run to the chasm edge, called back, his voice thin in the cold darkness.
Johnny, the cliff face is gone!